This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3808 for Wednesday, the 8th of March, 2023. Today's show is entitled Funkwhale, a social platform to enjoy and share music. It is hosted by Ken Fallon and is about 61 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, Ken interviews Kieran Ainsworth about Funkwhale that lets you listen and share music.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Today, we're going to have an interview, a chap that we met at the FOSDEM, came over to the HPR booth, and said we'd have a chat. So, can you introduce yourself? Tell me who you are and where you're from.
Yes, my name is Kieran Ainsworth. I'm known online as Sparif, and I am a technical writer from England, currently living in Berlin.
Kieran, so Irish ancestry there in the background somewhere, I'm guessing?
Yes, yeah, Irish ancestry and Welsh ancestry.
Oh, very good. Celts. Celts are strong in this one.
Yes. Yeah, very Celtic. A little bit of French in there somewhere as well, so, you know. And yet, part of me likes the English part, let's put it that way.
No, it's fine, you had no passport, class.
No, unfortunately, all too far out to get the European passport. But that's why I moved here, was to sort of rejoin myself.
So you're in Germany now. Does that mean you can travel anywhere within Schengen?
So I have a a visa that basically enables me to travel freely in the EU and, yes, Schengen. And my British passport does still obviously get me anywhere that isn't Europe perfectly fine. So, yes, but it was important to me to get the visa so that my sort of travel within Europe was unrestricted.
Unbelievable. And of course, you can still travel to Ireland without anything, the movement area.
Yeah. I mean, I never looked into traveling to the Republic, but certainly on my British passport, of course, I can just get into the North and then travel down, and there's no restrictions. So,
yeah, you don't even need a passport, just something like an energy bill or something.
Yeah, exactly. Just
weird.
Make way, you know?
Yes, I'm back.
Yes, I never left.
Okay. So you were, we were talking actually, and you followed up that with some suggestions. We were handing out leaflets for the Free Culture podcast thing. And we were trying to gather as many shows as possible that were released under the Free Culture license. And we followed. You recommended BSD Now.
Yes. Yeah. It's a show I listen to a lot. I was a little bit surprised because I am friends with a few people from a few other podcasts on your network, such as Bugcast and Linux Lads and things like that. And I listened to BSD Now a lot, and I was like, oh, it's interesting that they aren't sort of represented. But then it informed me it's a license issue more than anything.
Yep. And actually, due to I already had pinged them back in September when you were going to FOSDEM, and I pinged them again since, and it looks like they've agreed to release under a Creative Commons license, albeit a non-free one, but something's better than nothing, I'm guessing.
Mm. Okay, well, yeah, there we go. Some good game of that, at least.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I did ask, you know, a non-commercial one, like, could you not up that? You know, what are you really going to be? Are you really going to make so much money from the commercial? You know, because anybody who's going to steal your stuff is going to steal your stuff. And yeah, good luck. Trying to get my team of crack lawyers to come and do an international copyright case on you is kind of pointless.
It's very in keeping with BSD, though, isn't it? Like, obviously, with Linux, the whole thing is, you know, if I released it freely, you've got to release it freely. Whereas BSD, it's more, I release it freely, do what you like.
Yeah.
If you want to do commercial stuff, go for it.
Yeah, but the BSD license, and I was given this example to the one person that, who didn't know the Creative Commons license. So are you familiar with the, you know, the BSD licenses and the MIT and the CPL? Because yeah, so I would have ranked like the, you've got the public domain stuff is CC0, and then CC just Creative Commons by would be a BSD license, I would have thought. You know, you can do with it what you want. There's no requirement on you to we're not preventing you from sharing it, we're not preventing you from reusing it, we're not preventing you from doing anything. The only thing is you have to get credit. That's a BSD license, I would have thought.
Yeah, I could say that.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm stealing that directly from the Creative Commons website, so
Well, you know, it's whatever, if you know, they were previously releasing it under no license at all, it just Absolutely. Was copyright yeah. Alan. So
yeah,
you know, anything is, like you say, anything's better than nothing. And it's just nice to be able to get in touch with people. It's encouraging that you can just get in touch with them and talk to them.
And it's great that they did release it. But the strange thing is, a few people have come back to me going, no, you're wrong there. When I say, you know, if you don't release it under a Creative Commons license by default, it's by default copyright, all rights reserved, and then it falls back to whatever website, the terms and conditions of the website that you're downloading it from. And a lot of people are saying, no, that's not correct. That definitely you can download and share, and that's all fine. And I'm going, I don't think so. But then again, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm trying to get a follow-up on that. Mm. But that's not why we're here. That's not why we're here. We're here because of Funk Whale. Tell me about Funk Whale and why we're talking about it.
Funk Whale is a project that I sort of work on outside of my job. It was started originally as a one-person project by Agathe Berrio back in 2015. And she originally devised it as a self-hosted free software alternative to Grooveshark, hence the name Funk Whale. It's a play on the title.
Grooveshark, what's that?
Oh, it was a sort of music streaming platform where you could build radios and playlists and that kind of thing. I believe you just uploaded your content to it. Like, I don't think they hosted it themselves. It was kind of just a toolkit for building things, although I'm not entirely sure because it was extinct by the time I came to look at it. But
Wikipedia says Grooveshark was a web-based music streaming service owned and operated by Escape Music. Users could upload digital audio files, which could be streamed and organized in playlists.
That's exactly what I thought it was. So that was originally the use case for Funk Whale as well. It was basically, it was a place for Agathe to upload her music onto her own server and play it back and organize it into playlists and all that lovely stuff. And over time, other people picked it up and were sort of like, you know, hey, this is neat. I like having this, you know, the ability to listen to music from wherever. And they started asking for more things, like multiple users, like multi-accounts, and then multiple libraries per user, the ability to share music. And over time, it kind of snowballed into this thing where eventually it basically gained ActivityPub support and became a federated platform, which is quite an interesting little challenge, as you ask anyone who works outside of, like, you know, micro publishing, like microblogging, which is, you know, ActivityPub's bread and butter, really. You start getting out into the wild west of what ActivityPub can actually do. So PeerTube does video, and Castapod does podcasts, and Funkwell does music, and we're all sort of there going, how do we make this work? how do we federate these things? And it's been a sort of a wild ride. I joined the project sort of back in 2018. At the time, I had been using Spotify quite a lot. And weirdly enough, I think the reason I stopped using them was because they removed a They Might Be Giants album that I had in my collection. Like, for some reason, it wasn't accessible. I remember writing to They Might Be Giants on Tumblr and asking them, do you know why this is gone? And John Flansburg actually responded like, I don't know, it's not our thing. That's our, you know, that's our record label. We don't do that. So I was like, okay. And I kind of realized, well, I have this big CD collection, lots of MP3s. I should really just like host my own music. So I was learning Docker at the time because I wanted to, I was going into sysadmin work, and I'd recently started hosting Mastodon and was looking for something to host music on. I came across all the sort of usual suggestions like your Ampachy and things like that. And at the bottom of a random Reddit thread, somebody said, hey, how about Funk Whale? It's, you know, activity pub driven and it does all this stuff. And I was like, oh, that's great, because I'm running another activity pub thing. I'm running a Mastodon server. Uh-huh. Great. Uh-huh. So I went to try and install it and I failed miserably. it went awfully. So I went into the chat room and I was like, help. And Agat actually picked up my case and started talking to me and took me through the reinstall process. Over time, I started helping other people. And then I basically said, well, you know, the reason is going so badly for everyone is because the documentation needs work. And I offered to go in and do that. And then over time, I also started picking up, you know, front end bugs and eventually some even like API bugs and stuff like that. And kind of just worked my way into the project over time through sort of sheer contributions and things like that. And nowadays, I spend most of my time on documentation. So we spent the last year sort of reworking everything, which includes a complete rewrite of the documentation from scratch. So it's been a sort of an interesting journey into the sort of open source field. Considering I came from absolutely no technical background at all, it's been a quite a pleasant journey.
Oh. I must say the website here is excellent. Yeah. I shouldn't do this when I'm doing interviews, browse the website and start getting involved in the project, but it is it's very, very well, very clear. It looks, I'll just describe it for what do we call them? Non-photon people, Mike Rays of this world, who has vision impairment. So the website itself, is it just via the website or can I, so what am I doing? I've got my Flack files. I'm hoping Flack will be supported. I put it on my Funkwell server here in my house, and I open up a few ports in my firewall, and bada boom, I can share my music when I'm in work.
Absolutely. So basically, there are really two component parts to Funkwell. There's the API and there's the web app. Yeah. Most people, when they think of Funkwell, they think of the web app, but really, the API is the thing. You know, it's the actual power behind it. But yeah, I mean, it's basically something you can put onto a server, can run on anything from a Raspberry Pi up, and you can store your music on there using either just a simple hard drive or S3 compatible store and sort it into libraries. You can then share those libraries with other people, or you can make them public if it's sort of Creative Commons audio or freely licensed audio.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can even publish music or podcasts directly onto Funkwell, which people can then follow like a Mastodon account, like a channel, as we call them. Mm-hmm. So you can be on Mastodon and you can follow a Funkwell channel. And when somebody posts a new episode or posts a new track, you will get that in your feed and you'll be able to listen to it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it does a few things. The project, if you're looking at the website right now, is very different from what it once was. This last year has been a lot of refactoring and sort of upgrading everything, including a complete rewrite of the web app and lots of cleanup on the back end. And Georg, who is our sort of technical maintainer, is currently actually rewriting this website because it's a bit of a heavy site. It's written in Vue, which is the same as the web app for Funkwell. Yeah, yeah. And we don't need that for a website, so it's currently just being rewritten as a nice, pretty static site, which was designed by our designer, Mathieu.
Very good. So the website itself, looking at the screenshot of the application, you got My Account, Settings, Notifications, Logout, which you'd expect, Browse Library, Favorites, Playlists, and Add Content. Yeah, fair enough. And Administration, a few things there that you'd expect. Down in the bottom left-hand corner, we've got your typical album art with a heart sign, the name of this track, album and artist, and your play controls. Obviously, somebody's playing. And in the main window, we've got one person, I presume, who's logged in, Lee Rosenthal.
So that's an artist.
That's an artist, okay.
Yeah.
They've got 187 tracks and 28 albums. And then we got Start Radio, Play All Albums, Search Wikipedia, and Embed. Oh, cool. Albums by artists. Music inspired by. Then we've got four different rows, four different albums available to me.
Yeah. It's an interesting experience looking at this screenshot because it's quite an old one and a lot has actually changed before like this last year of work. So the bottom left player is now basically a player bar along the bottom, which you can pop up into a full screen player, which shows you the album art and stuff like that. The left-hand sidebar, a lot has changed there. The queue is now a virtual queue inside the sort of collapsed play bar. So a lot has changed since then, but a lot more is going to change in the future as well. So, you know, it's a bit of a snapshot of history at this point in time. We've been trying to update.
Up at the top, I've got Browse, Albums, Artists, Radios, and Playlists. So I can just search my media there.
Yeah. So there's a search bar in the top left corner, which basically performs a quick search and will return results matching albums, albums, artists, and sort of tracks. But then there's a full screen search as well, which you can go into to do a more sort of in-depth search on particular things like podcasts or albums or artists.
Right. So what does this? I have no intention of installing this. Just by the way, fast forward to next weekend when I'm running it. But okay. So it'll run on a Raspberry Pi and. I've got a lot of music, a lot of CDs that are on in FLAC format, but the metadata is all over the shop. So what happens there?
So let's
go back. Say I got what do I need? Say I have a Raspberry Pi and a 1 terabyte hard drive with my music on it in all sorts of directories.
Sure.
Then what? What do I do?
So if you want to basically leave all of that music kind of where it is, you can do what's called an in-place import. So you can basically, as long as the directory is visible to the server, you can basically say import in place. And all that does is it says to Funkwhale, just take a note of where these tracks sit in the sort of file system. Don't move them, don't do anything with them, just reference them there. And then when I click play, that's where you access them.
That's exactly.
You can also you can also do like an import where you actually basically copy the files in from another place, or you can just drag and drop files from your local hard drive onto your server through the web interface and upload them that way. So it depends where it is, but yes, you have options for in-place imports and things like that.
All three covered. Excellent. Okay.
Yes. As for tagging,
tagging. How do you install it, by the way?
How do you install it? Well, we've got a few ways to install. So the two sort of simplest ways are we have a quick install script where basically you run the script and you point it at a server and it goes and basically installs everything for you, assuming a sort of a Debian-based server. So it gives you some options like, do you want to install a reverse proxy? Do you want to, you know, set up all these different things? And then it just installs the software for you. The other way to do it is to run sort of a Docker compose sort of setup, which is how I run it, which is just a very sort of straightforward, we ship a compose file, you basically just, you know, make the relevant directories and then run the compose file and it will create the relevant sort of Docker containers for you. There are also guides available for, so you can install it directly on Debian yourself if you want to. You can also, somebody maintains a Arch installation instructions. There's YunoHost or UnoHost, if that's your fancy.
Yep.
So there's a few different ways to install it.
Okay. And what's the underlying technology, PHP or?
It's Vue.js, so that's our front-end framework.
Never heard of it.
It's basically a JavaScript framework for creating single page applications. So with Funkwhale, you want certain things to remain on screen at all times. For example, the player. You don't want that to disappear when you sort of go to another page. So it's a single page application. It will reload the stuff that you ask it to, and it will leave the stuff that's currently doing something in place. And then on the back end, it's a Django REST framework. So that's Python based. The database that we sort of support is PostgreSQL and PostgreSQL. I guess some people say to me, it's not SQL. I used to be a SQL administrator. I've called it SQL this whole time. Nobody told me. It also uses Redis for some caching and task management stuff, specifically to do with federation. So in order to process lots of different federation tasks, we have a queue set up by Redis, which then sort of fires them off at the API or fetches data from the database or something like that. So it allows you to keep running things smoothly while it deals with the ins and outs of a federated service.
Cool. And that website is ujs.org. So Victor, Uniform, Echo, Juliet, Sierra.org.
Yeah. It's a very popular framework at the moment. And it's going from strength to strength with its new focus on Vite, which is a very fast sort of JavaScript compiler and things like that. So they're really going from strength to strength at the moment. And we recently moved from Vue 2, which was their previous sort of major release, to Vue 3, and from JavaScript to TypeScript. Casper, who's one of our contributors, developers, took on that Herculean task pretty much single-handedly. And I don't envy him for it at all. It was a lot of work. Like every single front-end file had to be changed.
Right. So now I have the thing installed. Presumably, I go to a web page and create an account and log in.
Yeah. So during the install process, you will create a super user account. That's done with a management script. So you create an admin account, and when everything is set up, you can go to your web front end. So in my case, I have Tanuki Tunes. That's my FunQL server. And I can just log in, and then basically I land on if it's a brand new server, you'll just land on a blank page with nothing, and you'll be prompted to upload some content.
Fair enough.
And you have three options for how you want to load content. Basically, you can upload things like your personal content, your CD collection, or the stuff that's on your server. You can upload those into libraries, and each library has sort of three possible privacy settings. So there's sort of private, which means only you and people that you directly invite to see the content can actually listen. There's instance only or local, which means anyone who has an account on your instance can see it and play it. And then there is public, which means everyone, everywhere, all at once. And so you can sort your music depending on how you want to do it. So for example, I have a very big private library. I mean, it's very big by my standards, might not be by your standards, but it's about 16,157 tracks. And then I have a Creative Commons library, which is about 1,000 tracks. And that one is public so that everyone can listen to it, share it, have it pod, have it on my pod. And then the private one, obviously, it's just for me and a couple of friends.
So do you, I'm thinking of, there's some very practical things here, actually, because my kids have got, everybody's got their own taste in music and stuff. And my daughter now works, and she has she alternates between staying here and being in to tell them where she works. So I could have a library and then have just assign that library to her, and then she could.
Yeah. So you can share it with her. So you can make the library, and then you get a sharing link with that library.
Yeah.
You can grant her access to it as a private library. And then basically when she says, yes, I'd like access, you just approve that to make sure that everything is in order. And then she's able to access everything.
I think a lot of where I'm going with this is, what will the FBI come knocking on my door when I start using FunQL, which is from the frequently asked questions.
And I mean, obviously, don't publish and publicize music that you don't own the copyright to. That's kind of where this comes down to. Sharing content, sharing music is something that, you know, people do and always have done. Most of my music actually comes from my dad, and so I share the library with him. It's sort of private in that sense. We don't publish it, we don't broadcast it for play.
Yeah.
And you know, we promote people publishing music publicly, if using Creative Commons or Libre. What was it? Licence à libre, licenses. And that stuff can be published fine, but admins have controls that they can use to, take content down. You can report it. You can make sure that the moderators know about it. And it's really the responsibility of the individual admin to do that. We are hoping to introduce better controls. So for example, ensuring that only Creative Commons licensed media or freely licensed media can be made public in the first place is something we quite like to do. It's just not there yet, but it is something we're trying to.
It's a good start. I have a clear separation between the Creative Commons stuff and stuff I previously was collecting.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, excellent.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, collection management is a hugely complex topic, and this sort of way that we've done it, which is having these kind of, you know, you're able to create as many libraries as you want, but they're all locked to those three privacy levels, and everything in that library is at that privacy level. So you can't have, if you start uploading and you upload to a certain library, you upload 80 tracks and then you think, oh, actually, I wanted this one to be public. It's not particularly easy to move that, which is something we're trying to address in sort of later updates, where we're moving to a collections-based sort of way of handling things, where everything can just be dropped onto your Funquail. It doesn't need to go into a library. It just kind of gets, you know, it's part of your library. But then you can create collections, and those can be as generic or as specialized as you want. And you can, you know, basically share individual tracks with people, or you could share like whole content collections, whatever you want to do. So we've got big plans for how to manage that, because mm-hmm. at the moment, that's something that people, you know, are really sort of aching for, is this really solid, music management.
And when I'm importing that, is there an option to, you know, correct the metadata in any way?
So currently, no, but it is something we'd like to do. Basically, what we suggest is we back onto MusicBrainz Picard, or MusicBrainz rather, the database for music. And so we suggest music gets tagged with Picard. Now, that's fine for, you know, some content, you know, that you're uploading from CD collection, from your server, whatever. But it's a bit of an upfront load. We do have a minimum amount of metadata that is required. I'd like to have some way of getting in app so that you don't have to go, oh no, it failed. Mm-hmm. I have to go and tag it with Picard and then come back and try it again. But you know, that's something we're sort of trying to work out at the moment. We're actually working with the MetaBrainz team to figure out a good way to do that. But of course, some people don't want to use MusicBrainz at all. So we have to have, fallbacks for other tagging systems and supporting the sort of bare minimum of ID-free tagging. So at the moment, it's kind of a two-step process. You tag the music first, then you upload it to Funquail. If it's got a MusicBrainz ID, you're going to have a great time. it can be a little bit hit or miss because it was just never really designed to do anything but.
So I also see that you have loads of clients for various different platforms, Android, iOS, etc.
Yeah.
And Clementine, actually.
Yeah, and this is because basically...
Bodhi and HTTP-DIRFS, FuseFS. Interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, so in terms of actual official Funquail sort of apps, you basically have, obviously, the web app. We have an official mobile client for Android, Funquail for Android, and we have a Mopody plugin. So Mopody, if you don't know it, is a sort of music, it's a Python-based command line music server. And you can plug directly into a Funquail server from that if you prefer to listen to music using a command line client. But the majority of these actually are using Subsonic. So Funkwell supports a subset of the Subsonic API. You can use your existing Subsonic apps to listen to your music collection off of Funkwell. If you, you know, or for example, if you're on an iOS device, we don't have an app for you at the moment. I'm sorry. I say this, I'm an iOS user myself. So, but you know, if you have a Subsonic app, you can listen through that, which is kind of our stopgap solution to until people, you know, support the Funkwell API in their apps directly.
Very cool. So why is the, I can understand having a media library and whatever. Why would I want to publish this on the Fediverse?
So in terms of publishing your music on the
Fediverse. And remember, this is probably a me thing and not a you thing.
Yeah. It's an interesting question, though, because it was one of those things where it was like, how do we, you know, we got Fediverse support around 0.17 was the release, I think, when we started to support ActivityPub and we started to support Federation. And mostly this was kind of for inter-Funkwell communications, so sharing libraries and those kinds of things. It didn't really use ActivityPub all that much. It was more about, you know, Funkwell to Funkwell API or sort of navigation. But what we decided quite early on, one of our GATS big goals was to be a place for podcasters. Because at the time, podcasters were asking for publishing on the Fediverse. They wanted to be able to have a podcast that you could subscribe to using the normal mechanisms of RSS, but also you could follow it like a Mastodon account and see the new episodes and things like that. So it became this big kind of R&D effort by Agats and some more people on our sort of team to talk to podcasters and figure out what exactly they needed from this, how we could build that. And obviously, being a music shop, we also decided this was a good thing for artists. If you're an artist who publishes their work currently on things like SoundCloud, Funkwell is a, you know, free and open alternative for you, where people can follow your work and interact with it in some way. And play it on their pod, you know, and whatever. So the idea is how it works is that if I follow an artist's channel on my Funkwell pod, they publish a new sort of track on their pod, it immediately shows up in my pod and I can stream it. So I don't know if that was clear, but that's kind of how it works. If you have a library of content on your pod or a channel where you upload something, I can follow it on my pod, which is what we call servers, and it basically shows me all of that content in my pod. When I then click play, it goes to your server and says, hey, I'm playing this now. I would like to stream the data from there. And basically, that's what it does. It streams from wherever you've stored it and caches it on your local server for later use. So if I play an album, like, for example, you have an album by Robin Gray on your server, I'm following that library, I play that album, it will stream it to my server, cache all the content in case I listen to it again later, and that's how it all sort of pulls together. So it's about creating this interconnected network of people publishing basically freely licensed content.
Right. Now I'm suddenly interested in this.
Yeah.
As a way to discover new music, you basically follow other people who are posting music shows.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I love Dave Broadcast's show. And
yes.
They published the 8 tracks that they have.
Hmm.
Then I could follow them and the people that they follow, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. Okay. Like, yeah. They could create, like, for example, because Dave gets a lot of music from, like, Jamendo, for example. There's no reason that he couldn't have a channel where he basically pushes the content that they play. And, you know, it could be like an album called, you know, the name of the week of the episode. And you can go back and listen to all the tracks they played there. And that would be a use case for it.
A better use case then would be to follow through and those artists follow those artists themselves so that, you know, they've liked one song, but
yeah.
I want to follow the entire their entire work.
That's kind of where playlists come into it, and that's something that So we do playlists. Playlists are a thing, and we are currently in the process of trying to expand those to be federated as well. Because currently, playlists are kind of locked to a specific Funkwell instance.
Right.
But unlocking the ability to actually follow playlists and interact with them, build them across people, like that sort of thing, is one of the goals, really.
Okay.
Because that's a big use case, and it's one of those things that isn't currently tended on.
I would then need to follow each podcast, similar to the artists. In order to basically, I'm asking how do I find new artists, really, and how do I follow?
So on a pod like mine, for example, I've got several hundred users. Not many of them are active, but you know, there's some there. And basically, when somebody who has an account on the same server that you do follows a channel, for example, that shows up on your home screen. So if they start following a musician and that channel appears for them, it also shows up for you. All of that content shows up, and you could search for it, and you can filter by, like, let's say you start a radio and you're like, I don't really care, I just want something that's tagged with heavy metal.
Yep.
Any content that is known to your pod and is known by followers, by people on your pod and people they follow, that is accessible to you, will start playing, basically. And you can discover new music like that. It'll pull in some tracks that you've never heard from, you know, somebody followed someone random from open.audio, and they happen to be making metal music. Great, that's now accessible to you, so you'll hear it in that radio. And you can like it, and you can follow them yourself, and you can, you know, sort of get involved with that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
And the more people sort of follow, obviously, it's very similar to Mastodon in this way. If it's a single person pod, it's very lonely. it's entirely usable. You can upload your music content. You get all the features. That's great. But discovery-wise, not much. It gets better when you have more people on the pod, and they start following people from across Funkwell. All the different Funkwell pods, they go over and they go, hey, Funkwell.uk has this really cool artist or podcaster who's making something cool. I'm going to follow them. And then you, being on my pod, Tanuki Tunes, you see all of that content appear. And you can just start listening.
So that actually that pushes me away from the idea of having my own server. Yes. internally, sure. Yes, for the use case of internally. But my Creative Commons music would probably be better off on somebody else's server.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to who is going to offer you an account space.
Yeah.
You know, because you have a lot of FLAC files, and they're quite big. The reason to host your own server, more than anything, is to, you know, have as much space to do with as you will.
Yeah.
And obviously, the more servers you have in the Fediverse, the better it is for everyone.
Yeah.
So I would... As a member of the project, I would encourage you to set up your own server.
As a
person who also sort of, you know, got their starts with Funkwell using someone else's pod originally. So I used open.audio, which is the kind of flagship pod. I can see the sort of use in it. But you can quickly start populating your server. So open.audio offers the entire free music catalog from archive.org as a library that you can follow. So you can immediately populate that in your pod by just following that library. And there's a few libraries like that. Mine is one of them. So I have lots of music like the entire works of Jonathan Colton and stuff like that, because that's all Creative Commons. You can just follow that, and you get a lot of content that you might never have even heard of. And I buy a lot of Creative Commons music to, you know, give people more content to listen to.
Spread the love. That's what we do.
Spread the love, yeah. And exactly. Spread the money to people who, you know, are making Creative Commons music, because I think it's a wonderful thing.
It is, sir. It is. I've been exclusively listening to Creative Commons music since the last 7 years, I guess.
Oh, wow.
No, that's not like I put on my headphones and don't listen to any other music, but I mean, yeah. Any new music, so I am interested in getting access to better Creative Commons music, because I feel that the innovation, in every town there's the cool bar where you go in and they've got You got the bands playing, and some nights it's good, and some nights it's not. But the night it's good, very good. And that's what I feel we get with Creative Commons, that spirit of, you know, it's a bit rough around the edges, but there's some good stuff out there.
Absolutely. Like, there are some really fantastic artists that I've come across, who some of them I came across because they're Creative Commons, some of them I came across and they happened to be Creative Commons. So you might have heard, you listened to the Bugcast. I don't know if you heard the tracks by like Solarference and The Blasting Company that were playing a couple of weeks ago, but those were my suggestions.
Very nice.
And they are bands that Solarference I saw live in Exeter when I was living there. And it just happens to be that they release everything under Creative Commons. And The Blasting Company are well known for being the band behind the soundtrack to Over the Garden Wall, which is a very famous miniseries on Cartoon Network. And they release everything under Creative Commons. And it's wonderful. Sometimes you come across these bands and you're like, wow, I didn't realize that, you know, they would do that. Jonathan Colton, another one who's like a longtime favorite of mine. And I didn't realize he released everything under Creative Commons.
I'm the opposite. I got into him because he released everything on Creative Commons. So,
I think I got into him because he did the music or he did some of the songs for Portal and Portal 2.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's where I heard of him. And then I started listening to his thing a week. And he also tours a lot with They Might Be Giants, who are my favorite band of all time. So I kind of fell into him that way and then realized later on, like, oh, his entire collection is like, you know, just
fantastic.
Credit based and you know, so I bought the whole thing. I bought every single track, album, anything he's ever done, and I put it all on Funkwell for people to listen to and hopefully go and do buy for themselves. You know?
Fantastic. Okay, now, right. Security issues about doing this. I mean, there are some risks with this. You know, you put it in the wrong library and suddenly Metallica are coming at knocking on your door for the music back. I want my music back.
Yes.
And then there's the bandwidth costs.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the security implications of having a server just open to the world out there. Talk to me about this.
So, I mean, security features wise, I'm not exactly the best person to talk about it because I'm not a programmer, but I can sort of take you through some of the stuff that we've done. So one of the first things is going to this point about content being uploaded that shouldn't be uploaded. This is a risk with any sort of service where people can upload their own content. If you're having if you have a service where anyone can upload anything, in theory, you're going to get a lot of copyrighted work. The important thing is giving people the ability to basically report that to a moderator and then giving a moderator the tools to handle that. So in Funkwell's case, we have a report option on everything. You can report users, you can report libraries, you can report artists, albums, tracks, whatever. And this sends basically a notification to the admin or the moderator team of the pod and basically says, so this has been flagged as copyrighted. They can go in and verify, yes, that is copyrighted. It shouldn't be public. And then they can choose how to deal with that, whether that be to make the content private or if it's a repeat offense or something like that, to basically remove the content and ban the account.
Yeah.
So we are trying to
comply with the DCM Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Yeah, exactly. We're trying to make it even easier. So we've been floating around this idea of saying, like, giving admins the ability to lock down, like, can users create public libraries at all? Or giving them a mechanism that says if something gets put in a public library, it checks to see does it have a license that is freely available. And if not, basically, no. You can't put it in there. So we have some thoughts on that. It's, you know, it's something that's kind of been in the back of our minds, but this past year has been a sort of a learning experience.
You've been busy.
It's a new team who basically took over the old, sort of, the previous developer sort of left the project. And we took over and we've basically been trying to learn the ropes. to security. So we've had security audits, and we will have another security audit soon, because basically we get funding from NLNet.
Very good, yeah.
And yeah, we're sort of talking with them at the moment to get another fund, another sort of round of funding from them. And basically, they offer a security audit. It's a pretty sort of standard security audit. It mostly tests like the front-facing web app for security issues. But it's a good thing to do just to make sure you catch some of those more obvious ones.
Yep.
The major problems that you will have on any app like this are things like access control for the API and basically port maintenance and management. So we have, everything is developed in the open. Our Docker files are pretty well sort of shown, and we use fairly standard ports for everything. We don't use that many sort of non-standard ports. We document which ones need to be open in order for things to work. And for things like Subsonic, which is a slightly older API, which is a little bit sort of, it's a bit of an add-on, that sort of stuff is disabled by default. So basically the admin has to opt into pretty much everything that would expose them to any greater risk. And the expectation there is that they will assess that risk for themselves and make sure that it works with them. Similarly, our Nginx config files, we've actually taken a step to harden those. One of the things we've done in this latest release is basically package those into the Docker containers. So if you're running it on Docker, basically you have a sensible default. You can override it if you want to, like we give you a mechanism to override it, but the point is we don't want it to end up where you haven't updated your Nginx files in ages, and you've just kept updating the software but not the Nginx files. So we've sort of put that as part of our new mechanism to try and make sure that we're shipping security updates as sort of well as we can. So we do take care, and we've actually had some really excellent contributions recently that harden up security of the sort of infrastructure itself. And with version 2 of our API, which is something we're developing at the moment, security is going to be sort of a big thing that we look into. So we really want to get into the mode of speccing everything to within an inch of its life, making sure that we've really assessed the access control requirements and the behavior, frankly, of the endpoints to ensure that they only do what we expect them to do. And obviously, this will all be developed in the open. Every single spec gets put up for discussion in a forum where people can go and talk about it. But we will always do what we reasonably can. I know that Georg, for example, who's our sort of main technical resource, he works in a sort of a company which deals with Kubernetes and large scale deployments. So he's pretty au fait with security and has been doing a lot of work to try and solidify that for us. it's a challenge. Like anything, like you say, anything on the internet, anything that's federated. The other thing that you need to touch on is things like abusive content. Like what happens if somebody on your server, for example, follows a podcast that advocates for Nazism. Well, how do you deal with that? So we implement allow listing and deny listing. So you can put your server into allow list mode, where only specific pods that you allow through will get in. Same with deny list, you can say that one in particular can't come in. You can purge content from different domains. So if there's a domain that's particularly sort of questionable, you can basically say, block that domain and purge everything it's ever sent to me. I don't want to know anymore. So we have a lot of sort of tools for admins to handle all of that sort of stuff. And importantly as well, users in the meantime, after they've reported something, can also hide all content from artists or from podcasters and basically say, I really don't want to see that. So while the admin is dealing with my report, hide it. Just don't see it anymore.
Very good.
We're trying. We had a lot of help on anti-abuse. We had Ginny who was working on anti-abuse back in the day. And she did a lot of work, sort of making it better than it was, shall we say? But it's an ongoing battle, and we're always finding things that we haven't considered. So we just have to keep patching and working.
I realize we're coming up on an hour here, which amazed me. I thought we were just chatting for 10 minutes. Can you tell me what sort of license your software is released under?
Yeah, so
I would be gutted if you say now it's a totally proprietary open core license.
No, we're pretty against that. No, the software is AGPLv3, so that's the Afro
Very
General
good.
Public
My
License.
Personal favorite.
It's the only license, really, I think, that makes sense for hosted server-side software. It's an excellent license. It gives us all the freedom that we want, and it gives our users freedom as well. We've had people come up and say, we'd like to fork the software to put it on the blockchain and do all this stuff. And we're like, well, good luck. You can have it. It's free and open, but we're not doing that. Yeah, nothing to do with blockchain is coming near us. So, we've had that entire
more
conversation.
More
Oh, people have this thing in their head that, like, they think that Funkwell's goal is to dodge copyrights. And they're like, well, if we put it on the blockchain and we had like a DAO that sort of did everything, and we put everything in IPFS, there would be no central authority to take down content. And all this, and we're just like, we don't hate copyright. No. Like, I don't understand where this concept comes from, that we for some reason hate copyright. We love copyright. Copyright's fantastic. We just prefer open licensing. That's about it. You know?
Yeah, I question that. Is copyright fantastic? But in the form that it is, we wouldn't need Creative Commons licensing if copyright wasn't broken. But okay.
Well, yes, but the idea that somebody should be able to copyright their work and not have that copyright violated. Say, for example, an individual creates a piece of music and wants to have it, they want to ship it a certain way. They don't do Creative Commons or whatever. That's their right, and we should be sidestepping that with technical solutions.
Personally, necessarily think that that's correct, because if I go out and I go to work and I work on a project and I create something of beauty there, I get paid for it. Thank you very much. That's it. Job done. Copyright is essentially a monopoly that we, the state, grant. And I think, maybe it's a way, but there could be other ways, because of the way copyright is done. We're locked into it now. That's an existential question over a pint.
That it's not Funkwell's position to question that. And more to the point, it's our position to, like I say, promote releasing your content freely.
Absolutely.
Like when you upload content, we say, hey, here's a license. This is great. And if you publish content on Funkwell, it's going to be public, so you should put a license on it. If you don't want to do that for whatever reason, we're not going to make a technical solution that gets around that by putting it onto the blockchain for everyone to see, and you can never take it down. No. A whole thing that we just don't want to get into.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This is excellent. This is excellent. The only thing is I don't really want to be running yet another server.
Yeah, I understand that. If you want to get a taste of...
like this to put on the to solve that two house my household spreading outside the house. And sorry if I'm talking over you, it's because of the latency and mumble, so my apologies for that.
No, not at all. But if you want to try out Funkwell, there are publicly accessible pods, so if you go to our website, there is a pod picker which actually shows you pods that you can sign up to. The important thing to look out for is what's the upload limit, because storage isn't free. It's that's the big sort of limiting factor for people who host content publicly.
Obviously.
So I offer on my pod, I offer like 10 gigabytes, which is one of the more generous offerings out there. I'm not trying to sell it because obviously
no.
It's something I pay for out of pocket, but some admins offer 2 gigabytes, some offer 15. It really depends on what you want. But if you try it out, like if you go to open.audio and sign up for an account there and just test the software out, see how you like it, maybe you'll think to yourself, yes, I actually do want to run this on a server. And
yeah, particularly if I'm running it on my own intranet for a while, just to get a feel for it. Is it possible to like replicate the data so that you know, you have different time zones? Or would that be just better replicating the data underlying? Is there a way to like have decentralized 3 copies of the same server serving different regions of the planet?
That's a question beyond me, but in theory, yeah. There would be, this is, you're talking about scaling sort of solutions here, and in theory, you would be able to, run several instances of, certainly the web app is easy enough, plug it into the same API. In theory, you'd be able to do load balancing with the API, and you'd be able to do sort of redundancy and deduplication with the database. It's not something that we currently document or really sort of offer support for. It's one of those things where somebody has written up a Helm chart for running Funquail in Kubernetes, and hats off to them.
No,
I mean, that's in my opinion a little bit overkill, but there we go. But the thing about this is the easiest way to do it would be to basically host multiple instances of Funquail and just follow the content libraries, because they will all just show up, the different sort of servers. So if you have 3 servers, one of which is kind of the lead server and has all of the data on it, just follow that content from the other 2 servers, it'll show up and you can play it. You know, it's kind of how it functions.
Right, without uploading stuff, can you randomly listen to other people's pods without having an account?
So the admin can choose to allow public unauthenticated content. So if you go to, for example, my pod, Tanuki Tunes, and you wanted to listen to Jonathan Colton, you can. You don't have to have an account. Basically, it's free and public, and I have turned off basically requirement for authentication on certain endpoints. So obviously anything to do with accounts, to do with uploads, to do with anything like that, that's all protected. But listening and stuff like that is open. That's down to the administrator to decide. Obviously,
yes.
There's a performance cost there. There's a
You're going to be paying the bandwidth there, obviously.
It's covered in my DigitalOcean bill. So I can just read it after a month goes by and cry. But I'm an aggressive sort of compressor. I upload all of my content as Opus files, which retain very, very high quality, despite being tiny, tiny. So I try to keep it down that way. But obviously, other people can upload stuff publicly. They can upload FLAC files, WAV files, AAC files, or whatever they're called. I think those are supported, AAC. Whatever they're doing, I'm not exactly sure. It is possible.
That might be a way to dip your toes into it, at least to the apps, before you start building your own server and stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. So I know open.audio, some of the content there is free to listen to. So anything on these, in anything that is publicly visible to you, you can listen to it, just click play on something and it should start playing. You can also log in if you wanted to test, for example, Funquail for Android. Just point it to a server that you know is sort of free and open, and basically just say anonymous authentication. And you won't be able to do things like favoriting tracks, you won't be able to build playlists or do anything like that, but you will be able to play
the music
and just see what's out there.
Fantastic. I'm a bit conscious of the time. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to talk about that I missed?
I don't think so. I mean, we didn't really touch much on podcasts, but it is an area of the app which has languished a little bit. We're planning to pick up focus on it again at some point. But obviously, on the Fediverse, Castapod exists. So people who are looking for a more sort of featureful experience can always go and look at Castapod. Mm-hmm. But Funkwell is, you know, we were the first. We were doing podcasts back in the day before anyone else was. And yeah, you can publish a podcast on Funkwell and just download the RSS feed and listen to it from wherever using your normal podcatcher. So, you know, that was kind of a feature we baked into it.
That's actually quite interesting because we get asked a lot, how do I start my own podcast? And this might be a good solution for people. Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm gonna have to wrap it up there, Kieran, I think. Unless there's anything else.
No, I don't think so. It's been really nice talking to you. Thank you very much for having me on.
No problem. I the feeling we could have a chat about this. Maybe we can do a roundup maybe in a 6 months to a year again, and come back when I have a little bit more experience having used it or maybe installed it, or if you have new features or if there's anything else you want to announce.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Just send me an email and I'm happy to come along.
Perfect. Okay. Well, thanks very much for the interview, and the links, as always, to everything that we've discussed will be in the show notes of this episode. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio.
Been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.